ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, one of our favorites is joining us one last time before taking on a new challenge. Dave Clark, formerly known as the Sounder at Heart. How you doing this morning, Dave?
I'm doing great, but you know, I'll probably always be a Sounder at Heart. I just have room in my heart for a few more teams.
fair enough. The original Sounder at Heart. You had to be one of the last standing from that platform. I mean, obviously, Sounder at Heart, you were the one that originated. But in terms of just the general soccer landscape, bloggers from 2008. You were even before that. There couldn't have been too many, could there have?
Yeah, like, let's see, that kind of, that 08 to probably about 2011 time, peak soccer bloggerdom, you know, Jason Davis with MatchFit USA, Steve Davis, Richard Farley, Ben and Dwayne with all of your projects, which would take too long to name. You know, Buzz still had a long history at that point down in Dallas, but you know, the Centerline soccer crew kind of peaked at that same time over in San Jose, and they've all gone different ways, some to ESPN, some to Pro Soccer. Yeah, when you look at it, it's people all over. When I was with SB Nation, that first, what, dozen or so that I was so involved with, I was the last one from the originals that were brought on when SB Nation made the commitment to grow soccer, and it's been a lot of transition. I helped a lot of those people move on in some way. At some point, I think I had 9 people who wrote for me as paid authors that eventually moved on to full-time gigs in soccer.
It's crazy. I know back in the day they used to refer to, also include myself into it, as the MLS 2.0 blogger generation. It really was the peak of that. I was on the Score, was where I was at the time, and I missed that platform because it was did a lot of good things. But we move on. Time moves on. So tell the people what exactly your next project is right now.
At the end of March 31st, essentially, was my last day running Sounder at Heart. I am now the soccer content creator for Tacoma Defiance and social media coordinator for Reign FC, both soccer teams called Cheney Stadium home down in Tacoma, part of the emerging mixed use of baseball and soccer fields. It's the one where the field actually fits along the third base line, so there's a great seating, and places like Albuquerque and Vegas and Reno and whatever come out to visit because the conversion program is basically set the standard. But, you know, my focus is going to be on gameplay and on connecting the community and telling stories about that. I think I'm just going to... Our website that'll be interesting to people will probably be We Are Tacoma. That's a big R, not A-R-E. And there you can find where I wrote a story comparing Defiance players to iconic places in the city of Tacoma. So calling them things like bridges and museums in the area, just to give fans a better idea of who these new talents are.
Dave, I'm wondering what will be one of the aspects of covering the Sounders with your own creation that you will miss, and I'm wondering what is one aspect that you will not miss of the day-to-day MLS beat life?
Well, the thing I'm going to miss is was a nearly 11-year-old blog, and a lot of people called it the one of the rare comments sections worth reading. Heck, 95% of the people who write for Sounder at Heart started as commenters, and several of them started as commenters and now get paid to cover sports. So I'm going to miss that kind of community. But you know, I'm going to learn a new community. But, you know, when you have over a decade in one spot on the internet, that's going to be a strong appeal. Not going to miss moderating comments. I'm not going to miss the ability SB Nation has that attitude where you're both fans and professional at the same time. And that gave us a certain freedom called like beer while covering games. I'm not going to miss that, or I am going to miss that. I don't know, whichever way that works, but you know, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be new challenges, and that's exciting. It's going to be exciting to, for me, I had other people that covered the rain, and now I essentially I used to just watch the rain, and it was fun, and I had a deputy editor who ran all of that coverage, so I didn't need to get into the weeds, and now I get to get in the weeds, and that's going to be a lot of fun. I get to learn about a city. I live in a suburb of Seattle that is kind of similar to Tacoma in some ways, in that it is it's got a strong industrial history, and most people that live in the Seattle city limits look down on it. And so I'm looking forward to learning a new city, because a large part of what we're going to do is connect to a place that I don't call home, and that's going to be a fun challenge.
Well, you mentioned challenge. When we look at the Tacoma Defiance, five games played this year so far, two wins. But when we look at both the Defiance and the Reigns going forward, for 2019 at least, what do you think will be your biggest challenge as social content creator for the Defiance and the Reigns, for maybe to grow their presence in their new market?
Well, the Reigns' big challenge is going to be convincing the people of Seattle to continue following them. Because they moved 20 miles further south, or I think 26, something along those lines. That's going to be a challenge because they're entering a new community entirely. With Defiance, they are a team that can be on the bubble in the Western Conference. I guess we are. I've got to get used to that. That's going to be one of the things I'm struggling with. It's on the bubble of the playoffs. They're very talented, but they're young and they're raw, and that's a different appeal, because this is a soccer market outside of the Reign's first season. Reign FC and Seattle Sounders are winners and have essentially dominated in the leagues they're in. When there's that winning standard, it leads you to it leads fans to different expectations. And with Defiance, maybe, you know, that might be unreal there, but the expectation is there to develop talent. I think Sounders FC signing Danny Leyva, the 15-year-old, yesterday to a up to 5-year long contract is kind of an example of what Tacoma Defiance can be within the greater organizational structure.
Dave, I'm wondering how your approach is going to be in terms of the type of coverage you're going to provide for Defiance. How much of it will it be geared towards a Sounders fan that is dropping in to read the coverage and understand the prospects and the pipeline and all that stuff? And how much will be sort of geared towards Tacoma and just someone that wants to watch them as their own entity, as their own USL team?
Well, the Sounders actually have one of their writers focuses on development and the academy structure and that side of things. They have a writer focused on that. So the good news is, for me, I just have to share his stuff because it's already out there, and duplicating that would, you know, I have two roles. essentially 50-50 of my time. So I'm not going to try to duplicate stuff that's already out there as frequently as, you know, I don't want to do that frequently because that's not an effective use of my time. So my primary, my goal will be to talk about how they win and lose, kind of tactical analysis and that kind of thing. And my role will be to connect Tacoma fans to their players and coaches. And then a lot of it is going to be the stories about the city and it's how it embraces soccer.
It's an interesting dual role because you're going from a development league, clearly, in USL to arguably the best women's soccer league in the world. You know, one of the best professional women's soccer team in the world. You're covering both, so it's an interesting sort of duality there. In terms of the rain, how excited are you to work in the highest level of professional women's soccer right now?
I get to, you know, starting this week, I get to watch Megan Rapinoe play every day. And she is, when you talk about best women's soccer leagues in the world, Rapinoe is, I think she was a top five player last year, according to, like, awards in the world. And she's going to call Cheney Stadium home, and I get to watch her practice and play whenever I want. Jessica Fishlock, who with Kim Little might be the two best players not going to the World Cup in women's play. Little used to call Rain FC home. Jess Fishlock does right now. She's in the UEFA Champions League semifinal with Lyon. And then when she's done with that, she'll be back with Rain FC. She is a destroyer and a connector. Just a pleasure to be able to pay attention to. So, yeah, it's gonna be weird. I'm going to be covering 15, 19-year-olds one day and World Cup talent. Like up to 8 Rain FC players will be at the World Cup this summer. And then Fishlock and Teresa Nielsen, who both of their national teams missed the World Cup by one result. You know, so they're near, you know, they themselves are World Cup athletes, even if their team didn't quite make the World Cup. It's going to be a fun dichotomy. And the Reign, as always, are expected to be the top of the league. Well, except for their first season, they weren't expected to be top of the league. But under Laura Harvey and under Vlaco, I'm going to have to figure out how to say Vlaco's last name rather than just call him Coach Vlaco all the time. Under those two coaches, the experience for Seattle Reign and Reign FC fans has been extraordinary. Two Shields, two NWSL Cup Finals, made the playoffs. This is year 7. They've made the playoffs a total of 5 times. That's just exciting. It's exciting and it's good soccer. It's stout. And possession oriented, generally don't head out on quick counters. It's an engaging brand of the game. That's going to be fun. Michael Thompson, who is the owner portions of the Rainiers, Defiance and Reign, last night introduced the team as you know, they aren't developing. As you said, they're possibly the best in the world. And for Tacoma to have that sitting in a stadium that is essentially downtown is going to be amazing.
Dave, we cannot have you on one last time as a Sounder at Heart, the original one, of course, without talking about the Sounders a little bit. The Seattle Sounders, second best team right now in the Western Conference, maybe the second best team in the entire league so far. 5 games played, 4 wins, 1 draw, 11 goals for, 3 goals against, playing tonight on the road versus Colorado. What is your thought on the Seattle Sounders in 2019 so far?
They're exciting. They're awesome. They're they're kind of back to what you expect Seattle Sounders to be, and you should. I think I'm going to hopefully get the numbers right, but in the last 20 games stretching back to last season, they've won 16 of them. They're undefeated in their last 10 stretching back to last season. Entering this year, I think the number Garth Lagerwey gave was over the season and a half previous. They'd won 1.8 points per game. If it wasn't for TFC Atlanta and Red Bull over the past 2 years, normally 1.8 gets you a supporter shield. They are a little, it's funny, their depth is pretty good. Harry Shipp and Will Bruin are fine, but this summer they're going to run into some issues with Gold Cup and other tournaments where their first line depth will be more than tested. They're going to have to go. They only have 24 on roster now, and heck, they even said yesterday that the 15-year-old Danny Leyva, who has been practicing frequently with the first team, could wind up in the 18 tomorrow just due to injury. And then they're in one of those stretches where they're doing three games in 8 days, and one of them is going to be in literal blizzard conditions out in Colorado tonight.
Now, Dave, before I let Dwayne finish the interview, there's one thing that I think you are going to be really excited about for the future, and that's a return in form of Jordan Morris in 2019. You've been covering the Sounders for a long, long time. How does Jordan Morris ranks as player or even just a talent and just a person growing and blooming in front of your eyes over all those years?
Well, this is one of the interesting things about Jordan Morris. I first met the Morris family before Sounder at Heart existed. I met them because the Starbucks I worked at way back in the day was their home store. So I went to USL games and saw Dr. Morris and would talk to him the next morning about them kind of thing. Seeing Jordan Morris go from a single-digit age as a kid with hot chocolate and frappuccinos to now be one of the United States. I'm going to call him the United States best forward right now for Americans. It's not Jozy Altidore. Well, okay. So it's one of those two. It's certainly not Chiossi Zardes. It's not Way, because a guy that's on the bench in the Scottish League is not going to be the best at anything. Because if he was the best, he wouldn't be on the bench in the Scottish League. And outside of those three, Zardes, Altidore, and Morris, you know, Zardes is in that decline phase. Jordan is in the is still rising, and I don't think we've seen his full potential yet. I think he's capable of 15-plus goals this year, whether it's winger and playing as a forward once in a while. Sometimes they flip into this two-forward set. Just during the run of play to get Jordan closer to goal. That's awesome. And he chose Seattle. He had options where at one point he could have made more money with Werder Bremen, and he turned it down because he chose his home. And I think that's a powerful statement. I think you guys up in Canada are seeing more of that as well with the Canadian Premier League, where it's not going to, you know, the Czech Republic or Sweden or, you know, a second division team in Japan. The players are choosing home and having that connection to those the players that we love and them loving our area as much as we do is vital to our futures. And that's what... You know, Jordan Morris isn't just a great American soccer player. He isn't just an awesome Seattle Sounder. He's a good person, and he chose us. And that will forever be ingrained and should be ingrained in every Seattle Sounders fan because arguably the best American forward at this time picked Seattle, and it wasn't out of desperation. It was out of desire.
Fair enough. By the way, peppermint mochas are where it's at Starbucks, Dave. By the way, I don't know about this Frappa stuff. I'm looking at the attendance from 2018, but I'm going to go back to the rain down the interview because I am fascinated by this aspect of it. 38-24 was their average attendance in 2018. That was, unfortunately, although they were close to a couple other teams, it was second from bottom. Only the infamous Sky Blue had a lower average attendance at 25-31. Considering Seattle is so, you know, in love with the Sounders and got out there in support of the Sounders in such huge numbers, what was it in your mind that prevented that number from being closer to what your old rivals down the road is in the Portland Thorns, who had nearly 17,000 as an average attendance last year?
Well, I think there's a couple different things that were challenging. One is something that's going to be corrected with the move to Cheney Stadium. Memorial Stadium is run by the Seattle School District. It's a historical property and has an enormous legacy. But any improvements to it were done by Rain FC. It has wooden benches with cracks in them and sections that can be used. It had bathrooms that were frequently broken. It wasn't a city. It's in a part of the city. It's directly downtown, but it's the part of the city that is most impacted by the growth of Amazon. So it's awesome outside that neighborhood. And so that's the opportunity at Cheney Stadium. Real grass, beer, premium sections with liquor. That's, you know, part of the soccer experience. And so that's going to be exciting. And I think when you look at attendance for Rain FC, I think you can kind of break up the NWSL into independent clubs and those with parent MLS sides or partner MLS sides. And Rain FC have done, when compared to the other independent clubs, have been top-notch. Like, they aren't the Boston Breakers. They aren't Western New York. They aren't Sky Blue. They're not Chicago. You know, I think, you know, two of those that I mentioned don't exist. Rain FC is an independent club. Done a great job. I wasn't the only person brought on to do content with them. Really, I have been following this story for a long time, and now as a part of the team, I'm really excited to see the potential in Tacoma.
We cannot say thank you enough for all your time over the years and your support that you have given our shows as well over the years. And we wish you truly the best in your future endeavors and the world of football, blogs, journalists, call it whatever you like, is going to miss you.
I appreciate it. You're not going to miss me because you're still going to read my stuff. You're just going to read it in a different place. One of the exciting things is that Defiance want me to do a lot of the type of stuff that you saw me do at Sounder Art that made it a unique place. I'm going to do things like, science fiction. Make Dune references. Frank Herbert was from Tacoma, so probably a lot of Dune, but I will do. I'll still be the D&D nerd. I'm not going to hide that. They have embraced me as much as I said yes. Because they want a unique flavor that isn't available to everybody.
Dave Clark, you can follow him on social media at BDurthin, and now social content creator for the Tacoma Defiance and Seattle Reigns. Thank you, Dave. We will be right back after this very short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Sorry for the couple last minutes of the Dave interview. Connection on the phone seemed to be a bit weird. I thought there was maybe some gremlins or Darth Vader was on the line or something. But we do appreciate Dave's time over the years. And it's going to be fun to see a different type of coverage for the Tacoma Defiance and the Seattle Reigns, created by our very own, the original Sounder at Heart, Dave Clark. Dwayne, last night there was a game in Major League Soccer. And no, not a lot of goals. We'll be honest, a 0-0 game. But I have to say, as 0-0 games goes, this one was actually entertaining, and a lot of Canadian content on the field for Montreal, 0-0 at Audi Field in Washington with all of Zacharia Broguillard, Clément Baya, Mathieu Chouanière, Samuel Piet, and as well, I'm missing a couple off the top of my head. There were so many Canadians on the field that I can't even name them all. That's how interesting it was for the Impact, and they got the job done with a point in Audi Field. Maybe even, you could say, a missed opportunity of getting all 3 points. But the Impact, 2-2-2 after six games on the road, Dwayne.
Yeah, no, real quickly before I get into that, personal thanks to Dave. First blogger ever linked, he linked back, always said yes to any request. You know, maybe had to bump it a day, but a class guy. You were right, we won't miss him. But because of the focus of our show, it'll probably be rarer that we have him on, and some NWSL coverage down the line. But in terms of the Montreal result last night, you know, we talked about this a lot in the spring so far. As you know, we put that 7-1 result there and put it on a shelf, and then you just set that aside and look at the overall 2-2-2, and you go, okay, they're fine. What the goal that we gave them, you know, that includes this home game that they play this weekend, and then there's two more away games before they have a regular stretch at home. Is that correct, Kevin?
Yes. So you have the next game is Columbus, and then they go back on the road for two more games before having a normal rotation of home and away. You would say.
Yeah, and we had 10 points was the goal that we had set for the Impact, to say that they had been successful off the start and they were already at 8. I did a little bit of digging prior to the show just to see where, you know, and obviously we appreciate that six road games does not make an entire road schedule. They will play 17 of them, so there is still 11 to go. But if you look at their points per game right now and you know, assume that maybe they keep something close to that. The last time a team, Kevin, finished out of the playoffs with a road record that was close to, what is it, 1.2 points right now that they have, that was in 2005. And it was the Wizards in 2005 had about a 500 road record and somehow managed to miss the playoffs when only four teams out of 12 did. But at any rate, they did that. So it's been a long time. This is the point I'm making, is that if you're playing this well on the road, you can expect that you're going to get your home points. No, you still have to do it. You still have to show up. You still have to perform. You know, there is an old adage in sports that the hardest game when you're coming off a long road trip is the first game back at home, because you kind of mentally relax a little bit and you have to be careful to not have that happen, especially in a short week.
It's not just a short week, it's three games in 8 days. They played Saturday, they played last night, and they're playing Saturday again. So it's three games in 8 days. But I think we've seen Rémi Garde's rotation, heavy rotation, but you know, it yielded out results last night. And when I saw Anthony Jackson Amel, when I saw the drive of a Clément Baya, a Zachary Broguillard showing why the Impact really wanted to bring him in, a Canadian player, 21-year-old, and he's been trained in Lyon in France, and you see the talent and the pace that he's got, and you see Samuel Piet being the marshal of that defensive midfield with players around him of Shamit Chaume, Anthony Jackson-Mel, Clément Baya, Mathieu Chouanière, Zachary Broguillard. And we're talking about a lot of young kids from Montreal. Yes, it was due to a congestion of fixtures in the schedule. It was due to the Nacho Piatti injury, of course, and the fact that there was some players on red cards from the games before. It's been two straight games now that we have players on red cards, so there's that aspect too. But you did see a lot of promising skills, a lot of promising go play going forward. The Impact at some point versus DC last night looked like the team who had control of this game. They never seemed bothered in this game. There never really was any danger. And when we look at the stats of last night's game, Dwayne, 11 shots for Montreal, only one on target, zero for DC, with 7 shots total, 5 off target and 2 blocked. But this tells me that the Impact and their back line with the job of Chimichanga and Samuel Piette in front of them were able to limit the chances of DC United, were able to nullify Acosta, who is not even the shade of a player he was last year. He's not even a shadow of himself. And we're seeing Montreal defensively, 2 clean sheets in a row, giving us an idea that it's no... Like, we had some question marks about the backline for Montreal because of unproven aspect of it and the age of certain players. Of course, Rod Fanny didn't come back, but Gary Sagna is there. But some other unproven commodities in Major League Soccer, like Zach Diallo, have shown already that he is a penned-in player. You cannot take him off the starting 11. And we've seen other players play well. And I think those 2 clean sheets show that Montreal will be able to hold themselves into a good shape, into a good block to defend as a team, move as a team, and once they pressure in the opponent's last third, they can create some chances. They didn't finish over the last 2 games, and that can be worrisome. But I do feel that on the road, 6 games and 2 clean sheets in the last 2 of those 6 games, it's more even impressive, Dwayne, than the 2-2-2 record. The last 2, they limited their opponents to 0 goals in 180 minutes, on the road. I think it's a very, very good result. And I even can say that those 6 games might have been the best 6 games on the road, the best road trip ever for the Montreal Impact since 2012.
Yeah, certainly. You know, when it comes to the goal scoring, missing Piatti is going to hurt you, right? And obviously you put that game breaker in there and maybe it's a different story. There were 5 Canadians under the age of 25 on the pitch last night.
That's
the Impact.
Insane. That's insane.
I want to mention real briefly, he was a player that wasn't really even in the Impact's plans as late as January. I knew he was in Edmonton for a while. Yep. They thought maybe FC Edmonton might sign him. So he's impressed to get back and put himself back in the thing. And I think that's what Renegard does best is he treats his team. You know, I don't think he sees a passport. He sees young players, and he treats them the same way as he would anywhere else. And that's not always been the case in Major League Soccer. And he's providing them with the opportunity to get out there and excel and prove their spot. And they can lose their spot, too.
We
saw that with
Jackson Amel last year. But look, full disclosure, look at him, how he treats Jackson Amel this year. He gave him the start yesterday. Like, with all that happened in the offseason, okay, granted, this year, Jackson Amel is the only player of the Montreal Impact that hasn't met the media yet, and that's his prerogative. He wants to focus on what he has to do and let his play do the talking and let his behavior do the talking, and that's full measure, good decision, I believe, for Jackson Amel. Yes, he didn't play bad last night, didn't get a goal, but it's not like he wasn't trying, and he wasn't the worst player on the pitch, but his commitment to the system of Rémi Garde last night was impressing me. I have this image of Anthony Jackson Amel being stripped of the ball in his own territory, but still running after that ball. He's at the top of his own box as a striker, running down the ball carrier of the opponent's team to make sure that he creates that pressure and he creates that chance of creating a turnover for Montreal, or Samuel Piette usually is the player who will get that ball off the turnover and relaunch the attack. And I think with his play, he showed Rémi Garde that, you know, I appreciate your confidence. I appreciate your confidence of keeping me and your trust in the fact that I'm not the player from last year. What you see in me now is who I am now. And I think Rémi Garde is really good for that. It's not what you have done for me last year, and I'm going to hold you accountable to past mistakes. No, it's what have you done for me this week, and you deserve to play, and I think you do, even though last year would have been a lot different. So I do feel Rémi Garde shows a lot of openness as a manager to give a second, a third chance when he sees that that player deserves it because of the work ethic and the amount of effort he puts in training.
Yeah, and with the condensed schedule this year, you're going to need to do that. The Impact, let's talk a little bit about their home opener coming up this week. And I'm curious, it's kind of a perfect timing for them. And I don't mean to rub salt in the wound of Montreal sports fans, but, you know, the Canadiens were eliminated in the playoffs last Friday. They had missed the playoffs. You know, they came close. They had a good season, I think, based on expectations, but they didn't quite make it. So there's no NHL playoffs to worry about there. The Montreal Alouettes are an absolute cluster at the moment. You know, there's rumors of selling the team and everything else.
Yeah, it's,
so
it's not good.
There's an opportunity here for them. I'm just wondering, you know, whether the attention is getting there for them.
Oh, yeah, no, it is obviously there. I think we're going to find 25 to 30,000 people at Saturday's game. Yeah, no, well, sorry, that's too much. It's 22,000. It's at the Stade Saputo, so it's going to be a sellout crowd, I believe, especially with the performance. And there's nothing quite like winning. And I think we're seeing with the Montreal Impact and their new president, there's a new aura around the Impact this year in Montreal. I think everyone who was critical of how Joey Saputo handled a few controversies over the years were not necessarily happy, but they understand the transition, and you understand that now it's bigger than just the owner dictating how he wants things done. And now the Impact has its own identity and its own place to grow and become who they could be, become the best of themselves, the best of who they are or who they could be. And I think with Kevin Gilmore, who has a lot of experience in LA, in the sports world, with the Kings back in the mid-90s, and with the Canadiens and with other sports entities, and his experience brings a kind of like a wave of freshness with the Impact and a new wave of trust. And I think the fans are willing to trust Kevin Gilmore and his five-year plan, I guess, from moving forward. And I think it starts with the results on the pitch and with the results and the working relationship between Rémi Garde and the president. And I think it all is coherent. And I think that's what we're seeing. It's positive. It's all going in the right direction. I think that's what the Impact is really working on hard this year, is everybody has the same goal. It's not just what is it good for me in the future, what is it good for me now, what is it, are we going to sacrifice a short term for the midterm, for the long term. I think with Kevin Gilmore dictating the direction and Rémi Garde dictating the soccer direction, which identity of play we want our academy, ourselves to have, I think everyone is pushing slowly in the right direction. And we're going to see the results of that direction on the field. And that 2-2-2 record, I don't think is a coincidence to the fact that there's a new feeling of identity with this club.
Fair enough. I mean, there's going to be some big decisions to make in the near future in terms of their star players. But if you have that business direction moving forward, you, I think, feel safer that you're going to make the right decisions on that front when, you know, in terms of purchasing new players. Piatti will have to be replaced at some point, but you know, before the 5 years is up in terms of any kind of business plan there. So, yeah, it's good. And we talked a lot. You can go back in our archives and talk about Mr. Gilmore's appointment and how much we were pretty – pie on it at the time, and we did a full show on it basically. So hopefully that's working out for them there.
And so far, exactly what we have said has happened, right? His better relationship with the media, his better relationship with it, there's a degree of separation when you're so involved, and this is to the benefit and to the detriment as well of Joey Saputo. When you're so involved emotionally, it's your baby, it's your club, you brought it up from the ashes, you made it what it was, you invested the hundreds of millions of dollars into this thing. The way you feel about it is so passionate and emotional, which is amazing most of the time, but sometime in a boardroom where decisions need to be taken, it does change the outlook and the perspective that you have involved. Once you have one degree of separation, like a Kevin Gilmore, you can see things maybe a bit more as a whole. You don't see the forest through the trees, but once you're outside of the forest, you can actually see it, and you can see which best way to shape that forest for the future. And I think that's what we're going to see. And it's refreshing. And so far, the Impact with that 2-2-2 record is showing everyone that, look, we're in the right direction. We're going to correct what we did wrong last year and is dropping points at the beginning of the season. Hopefully, we have and as good home record as we did last year. And if that's the case, the Impact's going to finish fourth or fifth in the Eastern Conference without any trouble.
Yeah, and that's important. I think it's very important for the Impact to get back to the playoffs. And you mentioned that dispassionate, that sort of one step beyond. It's not to say that they're not passionate about what they're doing, but
it's,
you know,
not like it's not their money, so you obviously don't react the same way.
You don't do an emotional calculation. You do a business calculation in terms of whatever the move, and that comes especially when you're talking to a player acquisition, right? I don't want to overly play up this comparison, but when you look at how TFC handled Javinko in the offseason, if you were just purely going at it as an emotional level, you do not sell him. But I think, as we talked about at the length back then, you needed to have that separation. And by having that one degree of separation in Montreal now, I think there's a better chance that will happen when there does come a time to make a decision about Piatek.
Yeah. Speaking of Javinko, Dwayne, did you know that he hasn't scored in 8 games in Saudi Arabia? He's being heckled by the fans already, and it's not going so well for Seba in Saudi Arabia. That's hilarious.
He scored a good goal on his debut, but that's a decent thing. I mean, he's playing in one of the best teams in Asia, but it's interesting there. We're not hearing the quake from the peanut gallery here as much anymore. Hear his name mentioned so much.
Reminds me of, exactly. Now, let's finish the show by talking a little bit about Champions League. Interesting games yesterday. 1-0 win for Tottenham over Man City. An upset, but it's the leg one of two in the quarterfinals. And Liverpool won 2-0 versus Porto. What is your take on Spurs versus Man City? We have to be fair. De Bruyne was on the bench. Jesus was on the bench. A very powerful bench for City. But a bit of a rotation for Pep. As much of a rotation that you can do. Still a very strong squad for Man City, but they fell 1-0 to Tottenham at Wembley.
Pep's going to be pissed that they lost to Spurs at all, but the fact they only lost 1-0, realistically, you know, with the home tie still to play, does put them, they were at the new stadium, Tottenham Stadium, but they're in good standing still. I mean, he's a perfectionist, so he doesn't want to lose anything. But 1-0 is not the end of the world in terms of City's Champions League probe. But we always knew that this was going to be a tricky tie for City. It's always a tricky tie when you're the favorite going in to play another league opponent, because I think that league opponent, especially in this particular case where Spurs, you know, although they're still competing for the spots next year, their primary focus is entirely on this, where City is divided still. This is the priority, but I think it's, as much as a lot of outside voices want to call the league, you know, priority two, I think realistically, internally, it's more like 1B. They want to win both, so when you get to an FA Cup semifinal, you want to win it too. There's a lot going on there, so they'll only lose 1-0 in the first leg, although, you know, if you're a Spurs fan, you're happy you got the win, and you're happy you prevented them from scoring a away goal, no doubt. You are, you know, basically, historically speaking, Spurs has a slightly higher chance of advancing from this position than City does. But when you look at what City's done, particularly at home, when they've rolled a few teams, including a few good teams this year, Chelsea, remember that game?
I'm trying not to, but yes.
They've got to feel confident about this moving forward. In terms of the other game, you know, there's a reason it got sort of relegated to secondary streams for a lot of people. It wasn't particularly thought to be... the biggest thing. The only question I have there is that, we talk about priorities. I think Liverpool's priority clearly is 1-2 Champions League this year, because they've won the Champions League within, relatively recent memory, whereas they've not won the league within relatively recent memory. But so maybe in some ways they might feel a little aggrieved that they have to play a Champions League semifinal, because once you hit there, it's like, oh God, we might as well win now. That would be one hell of a way to finish the season. If City and Liverpool go down to the brink and then they play a Champions League final together against each other, I don't know if my heart can handle it, but it would be fun to watch as a neutral, I'm sure.
It might happen. There's a very high probability that it happens, Or it could be in Manchester Derby final in the Champions League, which I doubt. We'll see today. 2 games in the Champions League today.
Yeah, we'll see today.
Ajax versus Juventus at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific. Man United 3, Barcelona 3 as well. 2 games today. Liverpool-Porto. Liverpool took 2 goals lead in the first leg, going to play in the second leg next week, going on next Wednesday back to Portugal. But Liverpool, it could happen too. Man City, Liverpool in the final of the Champions League, or in a semifinal, which would actually be fascinating too, if it's in a semifinal.
Terrible. You said the word terrible wrong.
Because it would be the exact same time as the end of the Premier League season. So you would literally have to choose. What do you do? Do you make your players play 2 games in a week? Both games really important? Do you do some rotation? It's fascinating to subject, and we'll know more. But I think that's about it for today. Hope you enjoyed the show. And again, if you have missed Monday's show with Kira McCormack, we do wish you take a listen. A very important show that Dwayne and I believe is worth a listen and a share. Make sure you RTR content. If you appreciate what we do, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame. Tomorrow is Two Solitudes Thursday, so Dwayne and I will record the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast for patrons only. We'll talk about the Canadian Premier League. It's the training camp in the Dominican Republic right now. We'll talk about a few new players signing, some songs of supporters group are going to start appearing in the next few days. Sukunda Matata in Halifax is going to be amazing, an ode to the first Wanderer, but that's just an example. But if you want to make sure you can catch Dwayne and I talk about Canadian soccer, $2 a month will give you access to it. Go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can take the pledge, $2 a month, and you'll get access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast once a week, usually on Thursdays. But as always, for Dwayne, I'm Kevin, and we do wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.